and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the show. It's the House Mark Radio Program. Oh, wait. No, it isn't. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it. It's where am I? Is it Hump Days? Is it, should we play the theme song? Am I at a stand-up club? Where am I? Oh, I know. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller. That's right. I always forget where I am.
Very
here we are. Monday through Friday this week, that's where I'm going to be, here with the lovely and talented Jackie Schechner. Not necessarily in that order. It depends on, you know, what flavor you like in the world. But we are filling in as Steph is out of, I guess, out of reach. Let's just put it that way. For those of you that don't know, Steph goes on vacation very rarely. I think only 9 times a year. And during that time, she goes to a spa for a week where they lower her into a vat of wine-made mud. It's a special form of dirt you can only find in the Andes or something like that, that Romanian princes use to keep their, you know, children 9 years old forever. Yes. Something like that. I don't know the mechanics of it.
That's why she looks so good.
It's exactly why. She is so well preserved.
I think fermented.
Yes, exactly. So they use a kind of tongs and they dip her down into this stuff and they make this out of, wine, which is of course a euphemism for the blood of virgins, right? You know,
if Newsbusters
is to be believed or something about, our ilk. And she goes on vacation and is pampered, hit with palm fronds, massaged quite thoroughly, does a lot of biking, a lot of bicycling.
Yes. Because no vacation for her is complete without excessive exercise.
Exactly, yeah, because nothing's more relaxing than not making it to your hotel room and falling, passing out on the steps of the spa you're at. And she, you know, but overall, just the finest foods, the finest thing, just to give her the moment she deserves after, you know, being on the air for 3 hours a day trying to hash through all this nonsense, as we will be doing this week. Of course, in contrast, Jim will be at a Motel 6 with some airplane bottles of scotch, and Chris will be at a one-man white party in his own living room. I think his pajamas are white, so he will be...
A lifetime supply of cottage cheese.
Yes, exactly. He will just be bathing in cottage cheese, and the funny thing is, I'll tell you a little secret. He always, when I fill in, he always watches or listens to the first show, if not to all of them, really.
Yeah, Travis said he was going to. Also.
Yeah, it's a little hard to like re-up your schedule when that's the case, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be fun, I think, and knowing that Chris is kind of at home watching us like either a proud papa or a concerned parent, like, you know, it's the first time crossing the street. I've done it several times now.
He can put us on the bus.
Yes.
And then, like Forrest Gump, sit
at the bus stop until we get home from school. So we'll be on all week. And Lord knows, after last week's every time I look back at last week, there's more news made off the last, you know, last week's 5 days than I think in ages.
Before we get into that,
yes,
there is one thing I want to do.
All right. But so, you do realize cameras are rolling.
No, I... It's too early for that for anybody.
I disagree.
So on last Monday,
yes,
on the show, when you were on, filling
right
in for Jim, who just arbitrarily decided to take a day off.
Sometimes he works, though. Sometimes he does
he has a voice job that isn't this voice job. Yes. So we had you on the show,
yes,
and we were lucky enough to have Linda Carter,
oh,
Wonder Woman, on the show. And Hal told this amazing story about when he was 7.
Yeah.
You made about 35 phone calls trying to reach Linda Carter.
I did.
And got in trouble with your parents.
I did.
For racking up one heck of a phone bill.
Right.
Well, on Friday night, Travis and I were invited to go see Linda Carter
sing right
in person at the Catalina Club, and I will tell you about that. But one of the things that we wanted to do was have her sign a CD for you. So Travis and I got a CD that says, "To Hal, love Linda Carter."
2 exclamation points.
Yes. And if you can see the CD, she is phenomenally gorgeous.
She's beautiful.
She does not age.
No, it's... Again, I think she probably goes to the same, you know, virgin blood spa that, you know, drained from the most beautiful women in Eastern Europe, made into a mud, caked onto
beautiful,
you.
Beautiful.
I mean, it's amazing.
Could not be kinder and
she's
warmer.
A sweetheart.
We went and spoke with her afterwards, and she gave us a big hug and was the sweetest thing.
Yeah.
And on top of that, she's very close friends with Mary Hart.
Oh, yeah.
Who also doesn't age, apparently,
right.
And could not have been nicer. And we had pictures taken and talked to them. And it was just an incredible opportunity to meet some very glamorous and yet very kind and down-to-earth women. And you haven't really lived, so you've seen George Takei dance to Linda Carter covering Miami Sound Machine.
That's true.
Yes.
I think that's on so many bucket lists.
Yes.
And outside of, you know, a Star Trek convention.
It was amazing.
You know what I mean?
It was amazing. And
yeah.
She was having so much fun. Besides the fact that she has an amazing voice, which I should not have been shocked.
Right.
Because apparently she was Miss World USA,
mm-hmm.
Miss USA World, and sang and had specials on CBS. And
right.
Is known for having a voice. But she had a lovely voice and a couple of songs she wrote on her own that were great. And then she did a bunch of covers and rearranged them with this great jazz group out of
right.
New Orleans. And it was so much fun, I think, to watch her have so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best part.
Right.
She was having a blast.
Which Miami Sound Machine?
Conga.
Oh, wow.
With a percussion duo to introduce it, which blew my mind.
That is wild.
Amazing.
That's like something Pearl Jam would pull at, you know.
She was great.
When they got on stage with Fish randomly for a jam session.
Yeah, it was great. She did Adele's Rumor Has It.
Uh-huh.
She did Candyman. She did.
Did she do a full-on Sammy? Did she go, who can take the sunrise?
Oh, no. She did the Christina Aguilera.
Oh, that Candyman.
Candyman,
yeah.
Right? Not awesome. But the Sammy would have been great.
That would have been hilarious.
And she did Bryan Adams. She did Dust in the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
She did. I mean, it was just.
Which, by the way, is a song that annoys me.
Why?
Well, the guy who wrote it in Kansas or whatever apparently converted to evangelical Christianity. And then wrote a rebuttal song because he doesn't believe we're Dust in the Wind anymore.
What is it called?
No More Dust in the Wind.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yes. It's like taking a hit song that you wrote and writing a song called Nuh-uh. And insisting on playing that instead of the hit song everyone came to.
It's like Taylor Swift writing We May Get Back Together.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Looks like we made it. Yeah, Taylor Swift cover, Looks Like We Made It, would be the most genius piece of hilarity. And it goes, but, it, you know, it would be right up there, I think, with the Republican Party's autopsy. I don't know if people are aware, but the autopsy report has been released. Tony, we have a theme song now for it. Anytime we reference the GOP autopsy. That's right. So according to the GOP autopsy, they seem scary. And by the way, that's the Quincy theme, for those of you that don't know. And if you don't know, don't call in. It's very upsetting. But we'll talk about that after when we come back from the break. But the GOP autopsy, their little, you know, which is actually their growth and outreach document that they're going to be putting out or whatever, will shock you in that it comes to the conclusion. It comes to the shocking conclusion that they have a messaging problem. This is, and here's the thing. I got news for them. They don't. As a matter of fact, there has never been a clearer vision of the message of the Republican Party than there was during the Romney-Ryan campaign. There has never been a better marketing campaign for an idea than the last year of Republican politics.
That's a fair assessment.
Yes, because the entire debate process, the entire primary process, the entire leading up to the convention itself, including Clint Eastwood talking to an empty chair, was actually the perfect marketing for the genuine principles and concepts of the Republican Party. And so when you hear them say, we have a messaging problem, what they mean is, we made the mistake of telling the truth.
We've told you exactly what we feel,
and that's a
and
big
you
mistake.
Don't like it.
That's a big mistake in politics. The document itself has all the content of a Paul Ryan budget, which is next to none. It's effectively a coloring book.
To repeal health care reform?
Yes, exactly. But keep the money.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, right. We'll be back right after this. And by the way, we're going to talk a little bit about the rape trial verdict that came down over the, I guess, Friday
night. Steubenville.
Yeah, Steubenville. And the amazing Bifrenic concepts that went on during that, the idea that she, well, we'll talk about it after the break, because this is kind of amazing, and it points to the very problem with reporting and prosecuting rape in this country and the public response to it when it's a certain type of defendant in a lot of cases. It's just, and it's right in line with, I think, where women are finding themselves in the electorate. It brings this to the surface so that it can be lanced and dealt with, I hope. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Stephanie Miller Show, and you're watching it on Current TV. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in with Jackie Schachner all week long. We'll be back right after this.
I'm kind of known for having a twisted sense of humor.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in while Steph and the Mooks are on vacation. Yeah, Dr. Love. That's the nice thing about having Tony at the board is that when I come in, we get to play some rock and stuff. And it's so funny when occasionally we'll get somebody going, it's too much rock and roll for me. And I'm like, do you guys listen to Randy Rhoads? I mean, I don't even scratch the surface of some of the stuff that she plays during her breaks or whatever.
Yeah, she plays System of a Down.
Right, yeah, yeah.
What time is she on?
Noon?
Yeah, we're a little early, maybe?
Too early for metal.
No. Never. You got to get up and go to work. We're helping you.
All right,
we're
that helping works. You. That works.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
The Bee Gees will make you miss the bus. I'm just saying. I know this from experience.
They put you back to sleep?
Yeah, how deep is your love? snooze.
I wake to NPR. I'm a little bit of a dork that way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Nice. Just because you like the patient-sounding voice.
I like the soothing
maybe
sounds.
Maybe we would do a lot better.
You, too, can have a tote bag.
Right. If you join our pledge drive right now, you can get, join the Stephanie Miller pledge drive. Get a box of wine.
And a windbreaker.
Yes, and a windbreaker that says, it's not really that cold outside or rainy. It's California. on a serious note, the Steubenville verdict came down as guilty on, I believe, all the charges they were charged with. Two out of the five boys involved were formally charged. They were actually charged with the actual rapes themselves. There were three other boys involved who simply filmed it.
From what I understand, there were tweets.
Yes,
and
took
there
pictures. They live
and,
tweeted
yes.
I mean, it's grotesque in and of itself. There are a lot of questions about where, as we were sort of discussing during the break, where are the parents in this? Now, I always, when the comment comes up about these kind of things, parental involvement, that a lot of times that comes up with education. You know, we need more parents involved with their kids at schools. And I totally agree. However, you can't legislate it.
No.
You can't actually legislate a parent being more involved in their kid. You can't with their kid at school. You can't go.
No.
If you don't show up to a PTA meeting, we're kicking your kid out of math class. It doesn't work that way. That's silly because one of the major reasons we set up public school was to make up for deficits in the parenting world. Honestly, this idea of either the lack of resources or the lack of interest or kind of a poverty-driven, habitual lack of education that had gone on for generations in families.
But then what does it say to now that we have such a lack of funding that our class sizes are too big for teachers to be able to keep track of what's going on in schools anyway?
I think that's a Republican principled stance against what they consider a socialist education system and sort of a YouTube paranoid nut bar wing of the Republican Party who thinks that these are, they think high schools and middle schools are indoctrination camps for liberalism, that kind of nonsense. Those two camps have systematically over the years, from the Rand Paul's, side of things to the Mitch McConnell side of things, have defunding public education, getting rid of it. I mean, it was a talking point during the debates. It was one of the things that I think Rick Perry didn't forget. Like, they want to get rid of the Department of Energy. They want to get rid of the Department of Education. Federal oversight of education. Now, here's the thing. What the point I'm trying to make is, though, is that as an education base, you can legislate class size. You could legislate how many books kids are food that they get to eat. But you can't force parental connection to the child.
No, there's no way to do that.
Nope, there's no way to do it. But
would you agree we have a crisis? A parental absence crisis?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No. Okay. I do not. I think the vast majority of parents have a very strong interest in where their children are. I think there are critical groups, and usually they're in line either on the far ends of the financial spectrum.
Okay.
Super rich or upper rich people who ignore their children, and you get these kind of Columbine type of, ignored kids who are acting out and have all these resources to do this acting out. Adam Lambert,
Lanza,
thank you. Falling into that category in many ways, they were very well to do, and had every resource he could want to flip out and harm others.
Yeah.
And no parental connection that was.
Well, I think the divorce of the parents was a lack of oversight. Not that divorce is to blame for it, but there was a lack of oversight. It sounded like the mother had control over
his day-to-day,
but the father wasn't there.
Exactly. But here's the thing. There's lots of situations where parents are split like that, where the mother or the father has total day-to-day, the other parent is absent, and those kids don't go shoot someplace up.
Yes.
It's really about what experience they have day-to-day. And again, we go to, the Newtown shooter, you've got this kid who, his mother was arguably a prepper.
Right.
You know, she
the
believed.
Doomsday conspiracy.
Yeah,
theorist,
she thought
right?
the world was going to collapse and she was going to need some high-powered weapons to fight off the hordes of rioting black people. You know, was the idea. And that's usually the.
Was there a racial component to it?
No, but that's kind of the subtle racial component of it in those situations. I'm not saying directly that was her thing, but that's where we get things like 28 Days Later. Why our zombies have sped up and now spit blood is because they actually represent rioting AIDS patients. This is the idea that this bloodborne illness, the fear of the poor, and they're going to come and off with my head, creates a different kind of zombie, where it used to be just march of communism, where a marketer of the worker, anti-union sentiment created the original zombie thing because people would walk around, go to their jobs, and they want to eat your brains because that's what makes you creative and individualistic. It was the Zine Randy and fantasy kind of that drove it. On the other side,
this went into a whole weird direction.
Again,
I was not expecting this.
No, but the concept being is that you can't, and now we have this idea that she had constant contact with her son. She was
right.
Very much directed,
taking him to the shooting range.
Yeah, exactly. It was
what how to shoot a gun.
His head was being filled with that actually partly led to what was going on, and that's parental involvement. Abstract, parental involvement. So, when you raise a rapist? Or you raise a rapist's friend who helps him. That's an extraordinary situation to find a parent in, and I don't know that I would level, it's almost one of those things where you find out your son is a serial killer. You find out, and you go, how did you not know? There's that zone of it. Here's my issue with it, overall. At that age, as much as I'm not a big fan of trying kids as adults or whatever, there should be a level of as a society, we shouldn't have to convince a 15, 16, 17-year-old who's capable of making decisions on this level that you don't rape a girl who's unconscious.
Absolutely.
That in and of itself, wherever else, but I only took pictures, but I only... No.
But I can take this to another level, and I know we're going to have to take a break in just a minute. But I do think that there's something to be said for the objectification of women in a way now, and maybe it's because of the rise of the accessibility of imagery on the Internet. But there's an objectification of women, I think, that's more extreme now than it's ever been before and more accessible than it's ever been before in terms of how young men view women and how women view the way they should behave around young men.
It's a great conversation worth having, and we'll have it right after the break. We'll be back. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in. Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in. And that's sadly, when I'm filling in is the only time you'll actually get to hear Doug Pinnick, Pound Hound, And I thought, thank you, Tony.
I play it on my show. I do a show on Sunday mornings.
Thank you.
I throw this one in.
How early are you on Sunday mornings?
6 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Sunday mornings.
Pre-church.
Is the show I do. Well, the,
well this
the show
is church.
I do is,
do you yeah. call it, is it the church show? Are you the church guy?
I guess I can say the name, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's the Jesus Christ Show.
Ah, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's syndicated and all that. So yeah.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Well, it's
you
a
know,
show. It's a good
you know
show.
You could be sued, though, because there's a jeans company in Italy that owns the name Jesus.
Is
it's
it
true.
Really?
Jesus is actually owned as a trademark. Jesus Jeans.
I
and
did not know that.
They put down...
Are they very holy?
Yeah. Well, I suppose...
I know health bar.
They have at least three. Otherwise, it'd be a little hard to get in or out of. By the way, we were going to move to that discussion about Steubenville, and we will get to that. But on the line, we have Lee Papa joining us, the rude pundit himself. And there's some several rude things we could be talking about this morning. And so we're glad to have you with us. Lee, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jackie.
Yes.
Good morning, Jesus Christ Show guy.
Tony. So, I'm sure you heard about the autopsy report.
I did. In fact, I'm looking at it right now.
Uh-huh.
It's, they're dumb.
Whatever gave you that idea? Why would you think such a thing?
When the number one thing you have to say about when you're reflecting upon yourself, let me put it this way. Imagine that you were, trying to date. And, you know, every time you went on a date, you know, somebody was just disgusted by you and just walked away.
Threw a drink in your face, kicked you in the groin, you got maced.
Never even got to first base,
right.
Let alone got laid. And so, and you just thought, maybe it's the clothes I'm wearing.
Right.
Maybe if
it's my aftershave. Right.
Yeah, did you say aftershave?
Yeah, you know what I need is some Axe body spray. That'll solve all my emotional problems.
That's it. And it's either that, and by the way, maybe I'll pay more for, maybe I'll take them to nicer places for dinner without realizing that you're just a terrible human being.
Right. It's okay that I think a woman is a skank if I just don't call her that to her face.
Right.
Or insult her race or her parents, where they came from.
If I come up with more charming code words.
Right, exactly.
For how much I have a great deal of contempt for you.
Yeah. It is stunning that play has been made of the use of the word autopsy for how they're dealing with it, because that's what Reince Priebus called it.
Right.
And a valuable word considering they're dead in the water as far as how they're each other. If I'm not mistaken, they come out for immigration reform officially, or they say they're going to.
Well, all they say, first of all, there's no policy laid out in what that means.
Sure.
It just says that we have to take on immigration reform. That's the litmus test, measuring whether we are meeting with them, with Hispanics, with a welcome mat or a closed door. And that's it. They don't really say what it should be. It just says we should advocate positive solutions. And not to mention hire Hispanic communications directors.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah. And what I love is that, you know, they make a big deal that they talk to 52,000 people and they talk to 2,000 Hispanics, which I don't even think that's, what's that, 4% of the people they talk to?
Right.
I don't think that really matches the population.
Yeah.
Percentage-wise, how many Hispanics there are.
Right, but I also don't think it's more about appearances, technically speaking, but sometimes you want to question which ones they talk to and why. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
I've talked to a lot of black people, including Alan West, and then later in the day I talked to Alan West again, and they think, you know, that, you know, in general, that black people, blah, blah, blah. Like, they by talking to their own echo chamber or pulling those in, like, let's get some Hispanic outreach people that speak to the, to the Hispanic community. But don't do anything to get more Hispanic politicians in there doing, actual policy that they might actually want to see.
Right. And that's the thing is you look at what they, like, for instance, even under their recommendations for how to get more African Americans to become Republican. And it's all about just identifying markets and hiring communications directors and,
they think they have a messaging problem. That's it.
Right.
They really do.
Yep.
Rubio even said it at CPAC last week. We don't have a principles problem. We have a messaging problem. We need a new way to package because leaving it in a bag on the doorstep on fire and ringing a bell doesn't help people bring the dog crap into the house. What we need is we need to gift wrap the dog crap so that it bursts into flames when it's in the actual house, so they can stomp on it there and we can get our laugh.
Exactly. I think it's recommendations like make Harlem Shake videos. You know, I think that as a way of appealing to the young people and.
Right.
And does Menard. It really say that in the report?
No.
Oh, okay, because Mitch McConnell's office did.
Yes.
Wait, Mitch McConnell's office said we should make Harlem Shake.
They
made a Harlem Shake
video.
Was Mitch McConnell in it?
No,
there was a big Mitch McConnell head a guy was wearing.
I have to warn you, though, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yes.
You know the worst part about it is they're actually making the video now when the Harlem Shake is sort of on the fast downward spiral.
Totally.
They jumped the shark.
By the way, in the background, there's a guy marking up a fetal personhood bill.
Rhythmically.
As soon as they switch over. Here's the thing. They should do a Harlem Shake that's sort of realistic, which is there's one guy in the office trying to have some fun, has to wear a helmet because if he doesn't, they'll kill him. And then as soon as the music kicks in, they're just slashing rights, giving away, eliminating any protections against big banks rolling over you, you know, defunding Obamacare. Like, there's all this, like, kicking an old lady in a wheelchair down a flight of stairs. I'm kidding. They wouldn't actually do that, only figuratively.
No. But, you know, it's every Harlem Shake video pretty much represents everybody the GOP wants to disenfranchise.
Right. That's the whole point of it, is especially people who want to have ridiculous fun.
Yes.
There seems to be a rule against that.
And they want to, I love that they want to change their name. They want it to not be the Grand Old Party anymore,
mm-hmm.
but the Growth and Opportunity Party. That Grand Old Party sounds, you know, old. And they
sounds plantation-y is whatever. The word grand makes it sound like old Beauregard.
Ah, there's a Grand Old Party.
Oh, gather around here, my string ties come loose.
Yeah, old's not that flattering either.
Right.
Time to have the Southern Belle Ball again.
Right, a mint julep and make sure that there's only a certain class of human beings down here. Now, we all know how we feel about the minorities and the gays and, of course, the women folk, but there's, let's be completely honest, some white folk that we wouldn't rather have around here as well. The whites from West Virginia, if you'll notice. We won't want them scourging around the plantation, dirtying up the place. But we need to reach out to them so that they continue to buy our product.
Dude, that is your new one-man show.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Right,
it's kind of like Hal Holbrook doing Mark Twain. I'm just going to do Beauregard, the Grand Old Party, gentlemen.
Hal Holbrook as the racist old Southerner.
Right.
The last living Confederate man. That'll be it.
So in relation to this, and by the way, for those of you that don't know, Rude Pundit is on Blogspot. For those of you who don't know, it's rudepundit.blogspot.com.
And that's because it's free.
Yes, that's true. Very important. I guess you don't have to buy your URL and drive to it, you know, just like a $7 a year charge, dude. I think we should start raising a...
We could have a Kickstarter.
Yeah,
fund.
We were discussing NPR earlier. We'll give you a windbreaker if somebody wants to pay for the URL forwarding for RudePundit.
I could leave a really terrible voice message for them. That would be it. Say terrible things about people in their lives.
This
is so-and-so calling. Go,
yeah.
You know,
kind of like a progressive, forward-thinking, racially, sexually, and class-level sensitive diatribe, but as close to Mel Gibson drunk on a cell phone as you can get.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
That. I'll even do it drunk.
You're not doing this drunk? I'm very disappointed.
Nah, I'm sorry. Yesterday, though, was Irish Coffee Day, so you would have...
Sure.
You should have caught me then.
Yes, I noticed that everybody was walking around. It's funny. Maybe I'm a little touchy because I live in Los Angeles, but the idea of being pinched because I'm not wearing green, being physically assaulted because I'm wearing the wrong color, having lived in Los Angeles as long as I have, is a scarier concept to me. Crips, Bloods, and Irish people at this point. You know what I mean? You could be shot for wearing the wrong color at the wrong place.
Wasn't it in it was in Hill Street Blues where they had the Irish gang?
No. Oh.
You know, they had all the different gangs that used to meet at the station, and there was the Irish one, and David Caruso was like the leader of the Irish gang.
Sure, and still is, arguably. I mean,
yeah.
In Hollywood,
yes.
It's like the Irish mafia.
There's no more Irish name than Caruso.
Yeah, right, exactly. A ginger with, as they would call him in Scotland, a ginger with, he's a ginger, with an Italian last name.
That's it.
And Clint Eastwood's squint.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the sunglasses. He's trying to fix it. So here's the thing. Rootpundit.blogspot.com. And you're talking we got to let you go because we're up against a break. I think
sure.
We got a couple of minutes. But I want to make sure that people get a chance to go on there and look at your the Rand Paul Marco Rubio double-tailed coin that you were talking about on there. Because if there's a better sign of bad marketing and a hopeless future for the GOP, I don't think there's a better one than Rand Paul and Marco Rubio in the same room.
Oh, right. And both saying just, you know, appalling things constantly. With Rubio saying that it's not bigoted for me to say that I support traditional marriages. Really? No, that's the definition of bigoted.
Right, that's exactly what a bigot would do.
Yeah.
Right.
And then Rand Paul, which, okay, fine, you know, we're with him on drone strikes in the United States, but or against Americans.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of baggage that comes with that, like, you know, the personhood amendment you mentioned.
Which he just filed again, which is, by the way, I think the second one he has done.
Oh, he filed it again?
I didn't realize that. Yes, it's
charming.
Yeah, isn't that lovely? They're taking another bite at the apple, but this just proves that he's going for 2016. This is all his maneuvering, because it's amazing to me that a libertarian would take both a stance against gay marriage and a stance against women's rights on religious grounds.
But you know, you got to support Rand just like you had to support his dad because drugs.
They're right, because they want to legalize. They're okay with legalizing drugs.
That's right.
As long
as
women aren't allowed to take them, and gays.
They don't like war, and they want to legalize drugs. That makes everything else they want to do fine.
Right, exactly. Well, that's what they're hoping, I think. That idea, that little part where they would let Dow Chemical and Monsanto run completely roughshod over every waterway and flowing puff of air in the entire country, and trust them to clean it up later after the cancer clusters start, that part's always been a snag. For me.
Yeah, but they still.
But weed.
That's still liberty, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Freedom. The freedom to be downwind from a coal plant and that lets its coal dust go into your waterways.
If you don't like it, go off the grid.
That's a good point. Yeah, live in Minnesota and on one of the little lake islands.
That's it. One of the last. You can find a place if you have a problem with your coal plant that's producing your electricity. You can just stop using it. Get a windmill.
Well, guess what? A lot of them are gonna stop because we're switching to micro nuclear. Have you heard that new push?
No, I haven't heard
new push for micro nuclear. Which, by the way, that new push has been something that's been around since the '90s, and is now getting the hard push. And it's coming almost. Without any want or desire from the American people, but it's coming.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll be something you will find yourself writing about in the next 6 to 8 months. Trust me on this.
All right.
You won't be happy about it, but you'll be writing about it. And it's an interesting story. It's an interesting debate, but micronuclear is one of the ways we're going to go in this all-of-the-above approach.
Does that mean that, like, my cell phone will be operated by nuclear power?
Yeah, yeah. And you're, I guess, you'll be on Simpsons carrier. You know, that'll be your
yeah.
provider will be the Simpsons. Root Pundit, thank you so much, Lee Papa. Rootpundit.blogspot.com and at Root Pundit on Twitter.
On the Twitter.
Yep. Fantastic,
right,
brother. Thank you so much.
Bye.
We'll
bye.
Be back
bye,
right.
Jackie.
Yeah. See that? He had a flirt going out the door. We'll be back.
I like the flirt on the run.
All right. It's a safe one. I understand. We'll be back right after this.
I don't have to commit.
Right. With more of the Stephanie Miller Show, I'm Hal Sparks filling in. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We'll be taking your calls and talking Steubenville after we come back.
Yeah.
As it turns out, the revolution will not be televised. It's on the radio. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, here I am rolling down another sunny highway. It's Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller while she's away on vacation. We're going to be here all week, and we're going to be discussing a lot of, in deference to St. Patrick's Day, hungover news from how much stuff went down last week, not the least of which was a verdict coming down on the Steubenville trial. Guilty on all counts, the two young men that were charged. I have a chip on my shoulder. I think about the other three guys involved who were not charged, I believe, with anything, who filmed it, tweeted about it, were aware of it, did nothing to stop it. This, you know, I almost, part of me says that if it's a murder in progress and you are an unarmed person and you do not, say, dive in front of the knife or gun, you cannot be directly held responsible for that part of it, for part of the death of that person.
But don't you have a legal obligation
to report it?
To do or say something that you can do without putting yourself in some
in
sort of
physical
bodily harm.
I totally agree. And I think in this case, there was no physical harm. And the argument, which is crazy to me, that was both two things were made by their attorney, two arguments were made that I find amazingly contradictory, and yet they use. One was that she was completely unconscious and they treated her like a toy.
Yes.
But it wasn't rape because she gave no affirmative no. She was so unconscious.
Joke that they were making on the video was that she was dead.
Right.
Like one of the videos that circulated, the kid kept saying, she's so dead that... So not only was she unconscious, but she was so unconscious that they were joking about her having passed. I mean, not that they seriously thought she was dead,
right.
But it wasn't like she was blackout drunk and somehow still conscious.
Right. Well, that's the point, was that they wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to have they wanted to be able to say that, well, she didn't say no, but at the same time go, during the act, she was so unconscious that they should be treated differently than if she was awake and screaming.
How is that not
I don't
worse?
Know. I totally agree. Here's the thing. When there are three people standing by while that happens, it's not even me. Let's go to Dana in Maryland, by the way. She's been holding for a bit. Hey, Dana.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hi,
We're
Dana.
Good.
Jackie, I'm so glad you're there.
Oh, thanks,
dog.
And hi to my chatters, who I love, and we chat about you, and we're really, you know, real fans. So I want to give a shout-out to my fellow chatters.
Yes.
First of all, and Tony, great music. Kiss in the Morning is nothing better.
See?
What I wanted to say was, first of all, I disagree. They should have been tried as adults. They urinated on her.
Right.
They urinated on her, okay, and put it on video. And, you know, she was, you can see she's unconscious. And the jokes about that she's dead like Kaylee Anthony, yeah, that's hilarious. You know, I mean, it's despicable. And once again, they are treating the woman as the perpetrator. You know, this poor girl is being, you know, basically thrown under a bus. Because these guys are football stars.
Right.
And, you know, give me a break. And I just feel that, you know, they should have been tried as adults. I don't think a year is enough. And, you know, this girl's life is ruined. And so the interview yesterday with Candy Crowley, did you hear about this? Poppy Harlow.
Horrible.
Was like showing all
so
this,
sympathetic.
Yeah, grief, grief for the boys and their lives are ruined and these poor boys. And I'm like, oh,
what?
My God, is this really happening on CNN?
Yeah, they were incredibly sympathetic.
I thought I was listening to Fox. You know, I didn't know what was going on. And I think Candy should have said something.
Understood. We'll be, I agree. We're at the break. We're at the heartbreak. So I got to go. Thanks for calling in. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Of course, as many of you know, Stephanie is at a spa on a bicycle while being massaged and mud-packed at the same time. Jim is practicing harmonica while enacting scenes from Leaving Las Vegas
in a Motel 6
somewhere outside of town. We don't tell people which one because every time we do, they show up there and make him do voices through the window. and of course, Chris is resting like a reasonable person most of the day and then staying up and listening to the show, making sure I don't screw up.
I have visions of him listening, watching, and doing bicep curls all at the same time.
That's entirely possible.
Yes,
while eating cottage cheese.
Yes.
I think it's enormous. He doesn't even use dumbbells. He uses enormous spoons full of cottage cheese. Hum! And every time he goes, hum!
Smaller men.
Cartoon-level, yeah, cottage cheese consumption that it makes him, it like gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like a Ren and Stimpy cartoon. It's amazing.
Have you seen his Facebook photo?
No, but I have seen his I saw his latest hiking Twitter picture.
That's
that he had.
The one.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yes. No, I yes.
Yes. By the way, on the line with us right now, we have Eric Bollert from Media Matters for America, who's joining us, MediaMatters.org, of course. Eric, how are you, sir?
Hey, good, and you?
I'm spectacular.
Hi,
but
Eric.
I'll be better.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I like when the men get to say good morning to me, their voice changes.
Yeah. Hi.
Good morning.
Where do we start? You guys had a busy week sifting through things last week, especially with CPAC and all this weekend, and then the follow-up shows are just stunning. Where do we even start, sir?
Well, CPAC is always interesting.
Yes.
You know, this was supposed to be the year when, you know, there's going to be some sort of internal examination following, you know, the second thumping that Obama gave them. But if CPAC is probably the last place on the planet you would ever go in search of introspection or in search of sort of intelligent, you know, ways to try to fix the party. I mean, you know, if you go back to CPAC, I mean, what's fascinating is it's always been considered, you know, kind of this fringe, far right. You know, during the Clinton years, that's where the crazies went.
Right.
That's where the Vince Foster, you know, bumper stickers you could buy about Hillary, you know, and Bill killing people. And that's where you could probably, I'm almost sure you could go to panels about the drug running that the Clintons did. But it wasn't really seen as the Republican Party. It was like the crazies.
Right.
And this is where they come every year, and they, you know, it's the fever swamp, and it's kind of interesting. But boy, you fast forward today, it's synonymous. I mean, it's just as crazy, but they represent the Republican Party and they represent the conservative movement. So the problem is, you know, during the, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the Republican Party was not synonymous with CPAC, and they didn't go to CPAC to try to figure out their way ahead as a political entity.
Mm-hmm.
But everything has shifted so far to the right,
right,
that they're one and the same. And now they find themselves at places like CPAC, which is not, again, where you have, you know, you have Sarah Palin as sort of the prop comic, you know, drinking out of her big gulp. It's not
the carrot top of conservatism with no difference to our dear friend Carrot Top.
Yeah, seriously. That's an insult to him.
Yeah.
It's not really where you go to try to find your way out of the forest. So, that's the dilemma that they find themselves in, and
right. Not inviting Chris Christie, who arguably is their way out in a lot of, you know, as far as, you know, who's polling the best on the Republican side. largely for the very reasons that they need to, you know, simply because he reached across the aisle during a tragedy, during a real emergency, during Sandy, to deal with a real problem, which is, you deal with the media, you know, veneer of the Republican Party at MediaMatters.org, you know, more in depth than anybody, and they seem to think that's the only problem they have, is that messaging idea, that, you know, that they just, they need a media fix, and it's not that their core is actually moved closer to those odd booths that sell Obama derangement syndrome-esque DVDs.
That's the problem the Republican Party has, and that's why this gulf is so enormous. You know, there are basically people that think, oh, we just have to change the marketing and change the branding, and if we just have to get people, you know, candidates to stop talking about rape during the last 3-4 weeks of a campaign, yeah, we'll be fine.
Right.
And then there are some actual people that realize that, you know, I mean, the demographics are just completely running away from the party, and, you know, policies like gay marriage and immigration and what used to be the defining issues for the cultural war that the Republican Party left to wage, they've lost all those war questions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it seems obvious to anyone who's paying attention, they need two things. They need a rebranding, and then they need an entire switch on their ideological issues.
But they can't do that. I mean, ultimately,
because that's what they stand for.
Sure, and
that's right.
And the, you know, we ha- you had that, they had this special breakout session called Trump the Race Card. Where this guy from the Frederick Douglass Republicans was giving a lecture on how to reach out to black people. And this guy, Scott Terry was his name, stands up and says, by reaching out to black people, you're losing and disenfranchising guys like me, white guys. Now, he's a total white nationalist.
Right, exactly.
The kind of person who back in the 90s at CPAC would have been, you know, the norm. But he would not have been rubbing elbows back then with, you know, the acolytes of George H.W. Bush. It wouldn't have happened. But now this guy is part of the bottleneck that Republicans have to get through to get to 2016.
Yeah, and at the center of that bottleneck is Fox News and is the right-wing media. And if this were just a party that had gone adrift and it had gone through its cyclical up and downs, and the normal people who were in charge of fixing a party were now setting out to fix it, like the way they've urged everyone to just completely flip-flop on immigration. They would completely flip-flop on lots of other things, and they would try to move the party back to the middle. I mean, politics and, you know, U.S. politics is, you know, we've seen it all before. Democrats went through the same problem. And so they would move the party back to the middle, and they'd begin to win independence again, and it would, you know, it would take a while, but that's what they would do. But they can't do that when they've got Fox News in the middle.
Right.
And,
you also can't reach out to minorities or disenfranchised groups and say, we have to explain how our policies help them when they don't.
Right.
Like, that's inherently the problem. You can't make your policies mean something they don't.
Right, it becomes a linguistic tap dance, though, where you're like, we are the party of growth and opportunity, so we need to tell them we're the party of growth and opportunity. We're just the party of growth and opportunity for 200 of the 400 billionaires in this country.
Right.
Well, of course we do. We're for their growth and opportunity. It doesn't apply to you, per se. You don't have the right to live here freely, but be, you know, safe and secure and educated and all those things. But they do, and since we're helping them, we can use the label. It's kind of like putting natural on your food, even though it contains petroleum, because you're like, yes, petroleum occurs naturally, and the, you know,
it'll naturally kill you.
Yeah, it's like it's like that old thing. You know, I have a friend who died of natural causes. He was shot, and naturally he died. They think that they can use those words and kind of tiptoe around these ideas and not shift them. And it's weird when they have people like the Frederick Douglass Republicans, or, you know, Geo Proud, which was not invited. They were disinvited, as it were. And that group always amazes me. Like, Log Cabin Republicans and Geo Proud always shocks me that they exist.
I know.
It's a party that fundamentally doesn't believe in your right to have the same rights and opportunities as everybody else,
actively,
and you support them.
And actively legislates against even the simplest freedoms you would possibly have, and then wants you to vote for them by tailoring a message to you somehow. They even say, I think, in this new... I'm sure you've been tearing through the autopsy report.
Yeah.
You know, and apparently none of it's shocking.
Well, somebody wrote on Twitter that an autopsy presumes that
the
they're
death
dead.
Of the thing. Absolutely.
Right.
This
so
is,
are
the
they
patient
announcing
is not
going to
recover.
Dead?
Yeah, nobody ever sat up on Quincy's table. Not ever.
But, you know, again, you know, and part of it is cosmetic, and so this is why they're... It seems to be while they're embracing someone like Marco Rubio. Okay, so now we're, as a party, we're just going to completely flip-flop on immigration, and he's going to speak to Latinos, and this is going to be our way into the future. And there was a poll a couple of weeks ago, you know, and Hillary Clinton, who hasn't lifted her finger in domestic politics in 4 years, you know, beat Rubio by like 45 points.
Right.
You know, in
they're
terms
Latino,
of Latino,
not lobotomized. I mean, they know. Yeah,
I mean,
pandering.
I mean, all you have to do is put, you know, Rubio versus a D, you know, the letter D, and Latinos are just, I mean, they have no interest in his message whatsoever. So this idea that, oh, you know, well, you know, he's from Florida, he's Latino, therefore he'll, you know, we'll be back in the game with Latino votes.
It's
insulting.
It's almost intentionally so. It's cartoonishly insulting. The problem is they don't seem to notice that. I mean, do you see that changing anytime soon? Do you see, like, honestly, looking at, you know, Rand Paul wins the straw poll, and we're up against the break, but in this last minute, I would, like, honestly, do you see Rand Paul pushing himself to the front runnership? I mean, Ron Paul won at CPAC every time he was
rather
two. There were 44, we'll play a clip when we come back from the break, about, there were 44 other, like, write-in candidates that people wanted in there.
Including Chris Christie, who got 7%, I think.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Right. Yeah. Do you see Marco Rubio or Rand Paul, you know, being able to walk this messaging gauntlet to any place valuable? Or is it just, like, another way to end up on Fox News or sell a book or...
Yeah, you know, that's the question. I mean, look at, you know, Romney couldn't do it. He would have been a natural candidate to sort of move the party to the middle and reach out to independents. But, you know, he went through the Fox News primary like everyone else. It's not physically possible, I don't think, at this point, to get that nomination if you've got to be... you know, the right-wing media candidate. And that's the way the party is set up right now. The right-wing media dictates all that stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where it's where you go to roost afterwards. It's almost like the old-fashioned lobbying job after you get senator for a while. You know, if you run for president and you get enough visibility from that, then you can go get a job at Fox News for a little while. You don't even have to win or even come in fourth. Eric Bowler, thank you so much. Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org, of course, the website which you should have bookmarked at all times. I'm just saying. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Hi, it's Al Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller. The lovely and talented Jackie Schechner. Fantastic. And Tony on boards. Rebecca Taylor on the phones. Rebecca is back. Oh, my God.
Amazing.
Don't even get me started. Well, actually, do get me started, Rebecca. Do it. We'll be back right after this with more of your calls. 1-800-STEP-12.
That is great radio.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. At SM Show on Twitter, if you want to follow her. I'm at Hal Sparks on Twitter and at Jackie Schechner. And if
just
you don't,
go to Hal's and then find mine.
Yeah, I'll bounce you over there.
You can't spell it. It's impossible.
However you would spell Schechner, you're wrong.
And Jackie's with an I, no E.
Yeah.
So that messes it up again.
That I'm used to. I live
really?
In Los Angeles. Yeah. I mean, people.
Do you know, I was once introduced to a guy, like, via email or text or something, and he said, yeah, I don't think I want to date her. She spells her name with an I. Like, that is enough to turn him off from, and then he met me and changed his mind.
Sure.
But, originally.
You know, like, the number of people who spell Hal, my first name, with two L's, when they're writing it
That's
down,
cool.
And I'm like, I know. I'm like, it's very, just, I'd understand if you did H-O-W-E-L-L, or you did some very howl, which
like
sometimes,
Thorsten Howell,
or H-O-W-L, and... thinking I'm coming up with some sort of rock star name for it. But Hall is a word you see all the time, and you know how it's pronounced, and you know what it actually means, and it actually has a definite, like, you could, H-A-L-L means something when you write it, and you go, oh, that can't be right, and you'd scratch out one of the L's, or, it, like, that's like writing, what's your name? Al. Oh, A-L-L. Right, all.
Hey, Tony, do you spell with a Y or an I?
Why? Obviously, because I'm a guy.
But he spells Braxton in the traditional way.
Technically, my name's not even Tony, really. But
Anthony.
Yeah, or Antonio, technically.
Anthony.
Really?
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's Antony, and it's spelled with it's A-N apostrophe, I don't know, and then I lose interest.
So with a star. Over
let's here. Let's you know. And by the way, let's play this. This is the CPAC announcer. Let's show how well this whole rebranding thing and putting it together. This is a CPAC guy announcing how their election is going for their straw poll pick.
There were 23 candidates listed on the survey. 23. We then gave people the option to write in people. You all wrote in another 44 people.
By the way, when did Denzel Washington have sex with Chris Christie and they had a voice baby? That guy's amazing. Play that again. Tell me that doesn't sound like a mix of, like, Flight and Chris Christie happening at the same time.
There were 23 candidates listed on the survey. 23.
That's
we
amazing.
We then gave people the option to write in people.
Who is it?
It's
the CPAC announcer. It's just
it
the
does.
Guy who's
it
in charge.
Like,
Denzel
like
Washington meets Chris Christie. That's amazing.
Baby. Absolutely.
I was drunk at the time. Right. Okay. So let's go to June in Atlanta, Georgia. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, by the way. Hi, June.
Hi, Hal. How are you doing?
I'm great, but I guess you could tell me this is, you know, my first day filling in this week, so it's...
he's awesome.
We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get our legs.
Well, I have a comment I want to make.
Sure.
I just want to say, for the last 35 years, the Republican Party is nothing but big business corporate and oil, you know,
right.
companies that have infiltrated our government through the back door of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
They have, you know, paid out big for, you know, lobbyists to pass bills that support or deregulate laws that support their greedy interests. And they got into their back door of the Republican Party by misrepresenting themselves to the common man.
Well, it's interesting to me. You know, and I appreciate the call. I want to make sure we get to some of these things. June makes a great point in that here they are, reaching out to what are effectively blue-collar rednecks all over the country. You know, the essence of what you'd almost think of is kind of the working white man,
right,
as it were. And representing, though, in every act that they do, two groups, religious conservatives on the most extreme fringe of that,
mm-hmm.
and not just corporations, like she brings up, but multinational corporations. Corporations that don't even have an allegiance or an alliance with the United States or some sort of idea that the American worker, the American citizen is important. We're just another consumer to them, and if they can find a cheaper way to do it or a better person to sell to, read China and India, they're gonna.
Yeah, well, the disconnect, and I don't know who said it, and I probably should be able to attribute it to somebody, but when the billionaires claim to have the same interests as the working man, you know something's
that's
wrong.
Absurd. They arguably they can't. You know, that's
there's
that,
no possible way they can be looking out for you and looking out for themselves at the same time.
No, it's like a cheetah. In this situation, it's like a cheetah going, yeah, I hope gazelles get to have sex very often. That's a nice thing, so there are more gazelles to eat.
Yeah.
But I don't really care.
It's a good analogy.
If their life is long and healthy. I don't want them to be sick. Only because I don't want to eat diseased organ meat.
Yeah, I don't want to pay. You know, we had a debate last week on the Young Turks with a member of the head of the Florida Tea Party,
right.
One of the guys from the Tea Party, and he was talking about how that he didn't want Governor Rick Scott to expand Medicaid because he didn't want to pay for other people's health care. And I said, well, you're paying for it now. So it's this whole concept.
You're going to pay for it. And it's going to cost you more.
Right. So it's this whole concept in theory. Theoretically, here's what we want, but that
doesn't
work.
Paul Ryan
budget. And we could
create
talk about
a fantasy
that too.
You can live in and hope it works out that way. And if it doesn't, you can be mad because everybody else not living up to the standard you think they should be somehow. without reality ever factoring in, without tornadoes and hurricanes and earthquakes and other financial systems. We'll be back. It's the House Mark's fill-in show. Yeah. I keep doing that. That's so crazy.
Stephanie Miller Show. Yeah. Special fill-in host for the week, House
Jackie Schechner.
No.
We'll be back. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in as Stefan the Mookster are on vacation. We're having a great time. Tony, playing a little lack of communication, which is an ironic tip of the hat to the lovely folks at CPAC
last
week.
We have a theme.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark.
Good morning.
Morning.
Listen, I just clicked on WCPT about 30 minutes ago or so, and I thought I heard you say that Christians that don't believe in or don't agree with marriage equality are bigots. Is that what you said?
Well, Marco Rubio said that not believing in traditional marriage, this was his way of, you know, languaging it, was, I'm not a bigot just because I believe in traditional marriage. And my argument would be absolutely correct. But if you actively try to stop someone else's marriage simply because it is outside your belief system, you take effort to do that. That is a bigoted act.
Okay, I agree with you on that.
Okay.
I just thought it was really threatening to hear it the way that I thought you posed. It was like basically outlawing Christianity if you don't believe in things that you don't believe in.
Well, criticizing something or not sharing its belief system is not outlawing it. It is simply criticism. And criticizing Christianity for, you know, what a portion of its believers do, or how it has been read or how it is actually written, is not a curtailing of the rights of Christians. It is simply a criticism about the belief system or how that belief system is acted out in the world. Would you agree? Right. You are not stopped from worshiping. You are not stopped from believing in any way, any more than when I criticize Bill O'Reilly for being a jerk and lying on his show. Do I stop him from being on the air? Does the federal government step in and, you know, eliminate his right to free speech? But there has to be a certain point where your belief system, once you start acting on it to limit the lives of other non-believers, based on, you know, social choices and not material things like murder and rape and theft, for example.
Okay, but I mean, isn't that dangerously saying that you're kind of taking the vote, the Democratic vote, away from Christians because they may not vote the way you feel on social issues? That's kind of a...
Well, no, I mean, we live in a democracy where, it's majority rule. There's protection of the minority thought, certainly.
Right.
There's protection of that belief system. But any religious system lives outside of the secular world in its own way anyways. You don't stop believing what you believe simply because it pulls the wrong way. But that also doesn't mean that the rest of us, if we've decided that an old system of thinking that did not allow, for example, women to work or vote, which is absolutely the structure of, you know, of older Judeo-Christian thinking, from the Catholic Church to the Episcopal Church to to Judaism. I mean, Sarah Silverman's sister, who's a rabbi, just got arrested for praying at the Wailing Wall a couple weeks ago because women are not allowed to pray at the Wailing Wall. Now, in the United States, we would never allow such a thing. Agreed?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So would that be the elimination of the beliefs of the people involved, you know, because they don't believe women should be allowed to go into a mall, for example, or into a workplace or leave the home without a chaperone, for example, if that was your religious belief system. Just the rest of society would not be responsible for enforcing your belief system.
But now, if you were to say that Islam was an old system of beliefs that really believes that Muhammad ascended into heaven from the Dome of the Rock,
mm-hmm.
you would be in some serious trouble with Muslims worldwide. Yet you just kind of cavalierly...
How's that? How do you mean? How do you mean? Why would I...
It's a belief system. You can't just discard marriage in a Christian way, just because it's not an old...
I'm not. You have every right. That's what I'm saying. You have every right within your belief system to get married and maintain marriage in your own way. You just don't have the ability to curtail other people's lives with your belief system. That's what freedom of religion and association is all about. That's what freedom of speech is all about.
What about... with one L. What about me rising to the level of the president of my company? Mm-hmm. I can rise to vice president, become the CFO, the COO, you know, get a promotion, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I still believe, as a Christian, the way that Jesus taught marriage, you know, I don't cheat on my wife, I leave my mother and father and cleave to my wife, the two becoming one flesh, that's the way it was in the Old Testament, the way it is in the Gospels. Uh-huh. I mean, if I believe that, would I be able to be promoted within my company, or would be discriminated against because of my religious beliefs?
Why would you be discriminated against because of your religious beliefs?
I want to support what you were saying earlier, but that's why I thought I'd call, because you seem
understood.
Like you're...
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying there is no area where in your description where you would be discriminated against for having a marriage the way you want to have a marriage. The issue I have is when you take your belief system and as the, let's say, vice president of that company, you issue a memo to the entire company and says, if there's any gay people here who would like to cleave to their husband or wife of the same sex in any way, they will be fired from this company for doing so. Then I have a problem with it, because we live in America. We do not live in a religious conclave set up with a singular set of rules. As a matter of fact, our Constitution is based on that freedom of religion. So you can believe whatever you want, and you're allowed to, within your family structure, to express those beliefs to your family as well, to your community. But enacting it on somebody else is the issue.
Isn't that not kind of like that's kind of ghettoizing Christians?
I beg your pardon.
Well, it's kind of ghettoizing. Ghettos are neighborhoods. They're not necessarily what we think in terms of what we think of ghettos in the 21st century. But when you're ghettoizing somebody, it's basically whatever you believe in your house is fine. But once you step outside your house, you have to be like a secular humanist. I mean, isn't that kind of creepy the way you put that?
I don't know. I mean, I think then arguably we have been ghettoizing gays for the last 200 years? Is that what you're saying? I mean, at which point, you know, system, you're saying that the priority of your belief system, even though it is not limited in how you want to live your life, if you want to marry a woman, you're allowed to legally marry a woman. You have all these protections and things are afforded to you in every way. You want to, it's not about your belief system and your ghettoizing of your belief system. You want to enact that belief system onto someone else. You may have no contact whatsoever. You are in the act of trying to legislate your belief system in such a way that you ghettoize another person. Whereas you are actually free to believe whatever you want, marry whomever you want, as long as you live within your own personal ethic. You want to, it's the issue where you're trying to enact that ethic on another person without them having the freedom to make another decision because your belief system says one way.
Okay, Cal, that was I like the conversation.
All right. I appreciate you calling in. That's it's an important distinction to be made, and I think once we have a conversation like that, it's easier to see how this is about freedom for everybody.
You need to go to lunch with Norman Goldman and get him kind of mellowed out on it, because he's very, very threatening, but that was very well. I thank you for the conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Mark. And a listener on WCPT, which is Chicago's Progressive Talks, where my Saturday show is, which is fantastic. Let's go to Dave in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, because it's kind of on the same related thing in regard to CPAC. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Hal, and Jackie with an I.
Good morning.
Hi. You, Hal, just absolutely and perfectly responded to that interesting and insightful caller, which I don't agree with. And I think if you look at CPAC, it provides the picture of exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. They have created a system where what I would call the historic Republicans that cared about the environment, that cared about privacy, are absolutely excluded and are fearful of speaking up.
Right.
And it's become, you know, that is really the mind control, the thought control police that people have to look at as the example of where we don't want to go. I think it's just super critical.
I always find it very shocking. when there's this belief on the right that the expression of someone else's rights that are in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, the acting on those rights in your own way is somehow a violation of theirs simply because it differs with their own either religious beliefs or makes them feel icky. Quite frankly, and that's really the way it boils down with gay marriage. If I'm creeped out by the idea of two guys together, I don't want the government to legalize their relationship because then I'll have to explain it to my kid. And my kid, who is perhaps hipper than I am, is going to throw back, well, what's the big deal? They love each other. I'm not gay, but they are, and that's okay with me or whatever. And then you've got to have a real conversation with your kids about where your belief systems come from. It used to be a lot easier. Everybody
around
believed the same thing. You didn't even have to talk about it. And if somebody got, you know, pregnant that you didn't, you know, wasn't supposed to on schedule, you sent her off to visit her aunt in New York, and it came back unpregnant.
Well, you know, I think that's right on. I think one of the reasons is that the people, the Republican Party and the right wing, have a real issue with control. Mm-hmm. And when they see people that aren't doing what they want, they have a perception that they're losing control.
Right.
But the other thing I want to tell
which
you is
they are
losing control. The other thing is I flew back from South Africa a couple weeks ago on a long flight and was able to listen to 01. And on that flight, you guys rocked. I'm buying your albums.
Oh, right on. Well, that's my band, by the way, 01. We actually have a new single out called American Psycho, which is, you know, I jokingly say that I co-wrote that song and Animal on the first record with Dick Cheney. Because it's a perspective switch. I write a song from a perspective that I don't necessarily share, but the idea is that, you know, that in America, I forget who made the point, was that serial killers have nothing on the average American because through the actions of our government and some of the stuff that's happened over the years, we actually have a death toll on us individually that stacks up really scarily if we pay attention to it. And so to avoid that, dealing with that and the blowback that we've experienced, we kind of just avoid the conversation entirely. And so that song is based on that idea.
It's just, and it was fantastic. It's great. It's a great song. And
thank
I like
you.
Good cranking music, and I also stream WCPT all the time. So, hey, thanks a lot, you guys.
Appreciate it so much. And we'll take a break. We'll be back right after this with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner, Tony, and Rebecca filling in today. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. And when we come back, we're going to play a couple of golden nuggets from CPAC this weekend, including Wayne Cuckoo Bird LaPierre and Ted Cruz, who is the gift that keeps on giving. We'll be back.
And now, here's something we hope you'll really like.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Nobody really cares what you have to say. You get caught up in traffic because every day's a bad day.
I don't even want to fade that down.
Now you make me want to go see live music.
Yeah, if you're going to go see live music, see Danko Jones.
I just saw these guys Saturday night.
Where?
At Anaheim House of Blues.
Well, I guess I have to leave my house to do these things. Right?
Yeah. The Finger. Right. Okay, so that's a song called The Finger by Danko Jones.
Amazing,
amazing, amazing, amazing three-piece.
Great.
They're
live.
Incredible. Yeah.
One of the best bands you'll ever see live.
Yeah,
really?
Seriously.
Yeah.
I
think so. Just straight up rock and roll. Good front man.
Great energy.
He commands attention.
He's a big, tall, mixed race guy from Toronto, Ontario,
yep.
Canada, in a three-piece band that when I first discovered them in Toronto, I was shooting Queer as Folk, and I came across the album there. It was like buying a bunch of local Canadian rock, because it's great that they're both 10 years behind us and 20 years ahead of us at the same time in music. Up there, on the album, there was a review sticker on it that said, if Kiss and AC/DC had a baby while sniffing glue, it would be Danko Jones. That was the reviewer's statement. It was very funny. I think they're much bigger than than that simplicity. But it's an amazing Danko Jones there. By the way, Danko is on Twitter at Danko Jones, D-A-N-K-O Jones.
Follow them.
Tell them
amazing, amazing.
We say they are amazing. Period. Tony and Hal, say hi.
Hey, Danko
Jones.
Yeah.
So this is, by the way, I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH12 is our number. And this is, let's go to Tony in California. Not the Tony in California that's running the board, but the other Tony in California. That's the,
Okay. Hi.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, Jackie Boom.
Good morning.
I just want to say for the record that I would date you even if you spelled Jackie without a J or.
Right.
I don't care.
With an H if you were hacky.
Yeah, I don't care. Right. C-H, I don't care. Anyway.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I was watching the coverage over in the CPAC, convention, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Over the weekend. And, you know, basically what I always been noticing is that, what they really have to do is just get rid of all these Tea Party, right-wing, candidates, you know? I mean, I thought they tried that.
I mean, they arguably, look at what, Karl Rove is doing.
Exactly.
You know, they're really attempting to stop that, to kind of run a front against that kind of thing. But then look what happened at CPAC. Here comes Sarah Palin.
They created these people. You know?
Right.
They created the
Absolutely.
Themselves.
They are Frankenstein being held up by the neck by their own monster. Yeah.
I mean, I heard Mitch McConnell, bribing, you know, saying that they had Rand Paul and Carl Rubio. And showing off that they have Rand Paul and that Democrats have Hillary. And I'm thinking to myself, we have the adults. While we have these crazy young ones who I wouldn't trust. The last time we let these people, or, you know, the last time that these young ones, they crashed our house, pretty much. And then now they want us to loan their crazy young kids the keys.
To drive the car back into the house. I totally hear where you're coming from. You know, the interesting thing is that they seem to think every single time, and the Tea Party was part of this, that this is a marketing issue. That the Tea Party was a new version of the brand. It was, you know, FreedomWorks was this puffed up, artificial AstroTurf front for what was effectively the moral majority. Same crowd we saw late 80s, early 90s, pushing through a kind of religious right agenda and a highly corporatist secondary agenda, and they just kind of switch back and forth depending on which person you're talking to at the time. But the essence of these two groups, they fuse together under the Republican tent, and they just every 12 years drive themselves into a hole and need a new name and push to kind of do this. And I think, interestingly enough, this is the area where social media, and I think media in general, is causing them a bit of a problem, because it's harder to rebrand when your brand gets retweeted that much.
Yeah, you can't take it back.
Right. It's way harder when there's YouTube videos and Facebook pages and all that stuff to do. In the old days, nobody had that. The paper came out next week, it could be a whole new candidate as far as anybody was concerned.
Yeah, we have a short attention span, but not when it's regurgitated over and over and over again, because it's constantly on the forefront. It's not going away.
Well, and when you try to do a branding effort, you have to be so permeate at it that you have to do a drive everywhere. You have to set up Facebook pages. You have to do online petitions. You have to do an email thing. The machinery that the Democrats really have down, but they can stick to it.
Well, it's also more authentic.
Right.
I mean, I've been entrenched in the online world for a long, long time, and it's very easy to tell when somebody's doing a drive-by promotion of some sort, and you're not actually entrenched in the online community. So it's transparent, it's easy to tell, and if the Republicans go out now and say, we're going to do this huge new tech digital branding campaign, it's totally obvious that there's no sincerity behind it.
Exactly. Let's go to John in Chicago. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Good morning.
Al, I'm a huge fan of yours. I just want to say, I am not really into the idea of states granting marriage licenses. My position is marriage is for church. States should be granting everyone civil unions.
Right. And well, effectively, they do. You're absolutely right. I mean, effectively, on paper, they do. They, you know, everybody kind of does. The paperwork is mildly different, but every preacher says, by the authority granted to me by the state of Illinois or the state of Wisconsin, which is really weird, by the way. Religious conservatives are totally cool with that part of every marriage ceremony, unless it involves gay people.
I mean, I think that one of the interesting things is there's so many conservatives who are really uptight about the authority of government, right? And say that liberals think the government is the answer to all their problems. We'll do this. We'll turn around and say, no, what we want is our religious concept of marriage to be codified into the law by the
right.
state. I mean, it's so incredibly.
It's very odd. It's one of those things like we want the government to sanctify life in the case of a personhood amendment, but at the same time trust the government implicitly on the death penalty. That they say the guy's guilty, kill him. I don't believe there are any innocent people ever put to death on death row. It's amazing to me. Don't you find that odd? Yeah, I appreciate the call. It's an excellent point. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. And I just want to say hi to Chris, and if he wants to call in and let me know how we're doing, you're totally welcome to. We got a bunch of calls, but we love to hear from you. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after this with more CPAC goodies.
Ooh.
And Rush, being Rush.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It feels so good. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation. And by away, I mean Steph can afford to go away and the other, you know, two are here in town.
Yes.
I think pretty sure they're here just staycationing.
Yes. I don't know where Jim is. We know Chris is probably.
He does the Anthony Hopkins thing. You know, Anthony Hopkins apparently has this thing where he'll disappear for 3 days at a time and he goes up to some, you know, motel in the middle of nowhere. He'll, you know, go to Barstow or something and find a crap hotel room and, you know, sit in his room and drink or something and be in, you know, an off the grid actor for a little while, which would be really messed up if Hannibal Lecter called for room service, or, you know, or whatever. Is there any available snacks in the machine? But that's what I picture Jim doing. Like, he's just kind of a, you know, he goes into his garage and pulls a big sheet off of a dusty old Chevy that, you know, he keeps finely tuned in his quiet hours as a way of keeping from, you know, bumping us all in the head.
He does have a wife.
I know.
I would imagine she has a say in some of this.
She probably avoids having a say. In my fantasy, she lets him do that just to keep him out of her hair.
Okay.
And then he, you know, twice a year or whatever, gets behind the wheel of that thing and drives it up to Oceanside where it promptly breaks down. And he stays in a motel attached to a marine base and pretends not to be there while the one car dealership tries to find that part that isn't. You know, that isn't even available on eBay. And then he makes it back just in time for the show on Monday where he's exhausted from his vacation. That's what I picture.
That's, I hear
and
you.
I don't think I'm that far off from reality.
No, I think that's fair enough.
I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph this week with lovely, lovely Jackie Schechner keeping us on the rails and making it a worthwhile show. But I will say,
from time to time.
A lot of big news, by the way, and 1-800-STEP-12 is the number, and we're going to get to more of your calls because there's a lot to talk about. The Steubenville verdict coming down, Hillary Clinton releasing a video today with full-throated support for gay marriage, and the GOP having CPAC this weekend and just deciding that. Yeah, we got it. Almost like a smoker trying to quit, going, you know what? The night before, I'm going to quit tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. So tonight, I'm just going
to
light packs of cigarettes and smoke them without ever taking them out of the box. This is what CPAC is. CPAC is, I'm going to stop drinking tomorrow, but tonight it's leaving Las Vegas. Blah, blah, blah. Honestly.
I used to live up the street from where they had CPAC. Now they're doing it right outside of D.C., but I used to live up the street from the big hotel where they had CPAC in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something very disturbing about the hordes of very white young men in suits and name tags taking over the area for those 3 days. It was just all very disconcerting.
Well, and by the way, after the next break, I will have some really good news that I'm going to tell you. You know, I like to end my Saturday show with a happy ending, but I think this one will be kind of an earlier one. You know, this will do.
I didn't know this show came with a happy ending.
Oh, all my shows come with a happy ending.
I had
absolutely
no idea.
And why, Tony? Do you remember? Because everybody loves a happy ending. That's why. So we'll get to that in a minute. But this one's actually a happy kind of a middle. Now, yeah. It's the happy part of it has been recanted since, unfortunately. I'll get to that. I don't want to give too much away. But it might shock you and not shock you at the same time. Here's the thing that I'm dealing with the CPAC thing, and 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, and this is, I'd love to hear from more of you about this, but it's amazing to me that they still, that Rand Paul wins the straw poll.
Right.
Hands down. Just like Ron used to.
Well, the question
dead.
Is it the same motivation, because Ron Paul won it because there's a strong core Ron Paul supporters who are very good at motivating that base for these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And then the media summarily dismisses the opportunity or the possibility that he might actually win something.
Right.
Right? Like, they ignore the fact that
he
won.
Beat Santorum a bunch of times right. during the primaries
right.
and that he actually had genuine legs in the primary
yes.
last time.
They just totally ignore it completely, and they say he'll never win anything, and they move
right.
on.
Right.
So the question is this the same group because it's family, or is it a totally different group of supporters?
I think there's a new group that attaches it to him. You know, there's the Paul Ryan Ayn Randians who attach themselves to him, to Rand Paul specifically. But in all honesty, he doesn't have a shot. He's never, let's just straighten that out right now and get really clear about this. There is no way Rand Paul's ever going to be president. Not ever, never, not ever. Not vice president, not secretary of state, nothing. If he's reelected two more times, I'll be shocked because he ran for Senate, not House. That's a way harder job to keep. Once you're entrenched and old, it's a little bit easier. But House seat,
I'm good with that prediction.
House seat, you can stick to for a long time. Senate seat, you got to start, dealing with some corporate money to stay in there. It's an expensive race all the time, and a Libertarian, even if it's just lip service,
yeah.
is going to have a hell of a time ice skating uphill in that area. But here's the thing: this is why. And I'd love to hear from the Rand and Ron supporters on this. But Rand Paul is a phony libertarian. He is a corporate libertarian at best. These free market libertarian ideas. This idea that somehow, you know, you just let business leave the market alone. The government has no business regulating business. They don't know what they're doing. All they do is slow down progress and shut everything up. Which is just ridiculous because until we started doing that, we had all kinds of toxins in our environment. You can track the violent crime rate almost directly attached to how much lead is in paint. That wasn't industry deciding, hey, I've noticed that violent crime rates go up when lead rates go up in fuel and in paint and in other stuff. So
profit is a much larger motivator than corporate responsibility and social responsibility.
Unfortunately, it's the only one
right
in there. By the way, I know school starts soon, so we're going to have to get to Michelle in Illinois really quick because Michelle is 11and wants to call in. Hi, Michelle. Or it's Michael. It's Michael. I didn't read it right
Michael,
on there. Michael?
Yeah. Hi. I just wanted to call in to say how much I loved watching your show.
Oh, right on.
Wow. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you so much. Are you in school currently? Are you on your way to school?
No, I'm off today.
Oh, nice.
How did you get a day off?
Why is it a day off?
I'm with family.
Well, why didn't I think of that?
That's a great excuse. Do you have a note?
Yes.
You have a note to be with family. That's amazing. I used to, to get out of school, there would have to be like 8 feet of snow, and I would have to have fresh stitches. That's the only way they would ever let me be out of school, and I would still owe homework. That's amazing. I'm so happy, Michael, that's enough that you can be with your family today. So here's what I want you to do today. I want you to give them all a hug. I want you to go up and tell them one good thing you can think of special to them, not just I love you, although say that as well, but something very specific. Something you love about them that they do, because they'll really appreciate it. You may think it, but it's always great when they hear it. So, and thanks for calling in, Michael.
Aww.
It's really awesome.
Okay,
bye.
That's my favorite call of the day.
It's pretty awesome. This is interesting. Let's go to here's the thing. Let's deal with the Steubenville thing for when we come back from the break.
Yeah.
Because there's a few callers on the line, and I want to get to them and further that conversation. Then we also have a bunch of callers about the GOP and their messaging or lack thereof. We have somebody in Jacksonville, Florida, who thinks they need a new name. We have somebody who thinks that they need to be more respectful to when they're outreaching to minorities
and not be patronizing.
How do you patronize? How can you stop being patronizing when you genuinely think someone is below you? Honestly,
I don't know. That's where you inherently...
We'll be back right after this with more of your calls. 1-800-STEPH-1-2 is the number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're here. And Jackie Schechner, of course, adding an air of respectability to the track while Tony and I pollute the airwaves with rock music. We'll be back right after this.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm in love, and I don't care who knows it.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in. And Tony, during the break, got a text.
Read it.
Read it out loud. This is from one of Tony's friends who was flipping channels and came across his beautiful mug.
They knew I was doing this. They obviously, didn't watch me, but they wrote, woohoo, you on the TV, you's famous.
That's it.
Hi, Alec. Thanks, man.
Oh, nothing like a good personal mocking from your dear friends.
Good friends, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the good news I was going to talk about before we get into our calls, 1-800-STEPH-1-2 being the number, is that according to President Obama, which shouldn't surprise anybody, but also according to John Boehner and Paul Ryan and Paul Krugman and anybody else who reads or cares to read, it is official, we do not have a debt crisis. We have a long-term debt issue.
Yes.
But we no more, as the United States, have a debt crisis than a family with a mortgage has a debt crisis. If you looked at your mortgage compared to what you make year to year, it's an insurmountable amount of money if you stacked it next to it.
Right.
If you go, this is the money I owe, this is the money I make this year.
Yes.
If you look at it that way, you'd go, I'm in hell and I'm never getting out.
It's true.
Yeah. 60 years wouldn't matter. I could live in this house forever if I look at just based on that yearly income. If I'm just looking at the stacks, it would just look horrifying.
Right.
And if you're the kind of person who treats this country like you're a renter, like our dear friend Paul Ryan does, because I think that's how Republicans actually view this country, like renters. They can't wait to move to the Caymans. And the damage they do, they will patch, when they put posters on the wall and they leave tack holes, and they're supposed to spackle them, but they just put toothpaste in them instead.
Yeah.
And get your security deposit. By the time the guy figures out, and he's like, these walls smell like mint, you're gone.
Well, it's very hard to trust you to run government when you fundamentally want to destroy government.
Right. It makes no sense. Yeah. So what's your primary qualification as a babysitter? Well, I hate kids, and I think there should be forced sterilizations.
Okay.
That's great.
We'll be back at 10.
But yeah, we'll be back. The movie's over at 10:30, but we're going to go eat after. Bye. Ah! Baby at window. Cue baby at window. So, but this is, this is the reality of it, is that what the biggest problem we have with our deficit and our debt was and is the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
Right.
These are the stack of these, and the fact that we paid for them with supplementals and did not put them in the regular budget and did not treat them with realities and then did a tax cut at the same time, and at the same time don't allow Medicare and Medicaid to negotiate drug prices like any other group would be able to. Corporations are fine with doing that, but if human beings want to gather as a company, they can negotiate anything they want. If they want to gather as a community or as a governmental entity, we're not allowed to do that. Somehow that's different. The corporate structure,
Even get me started. I mean, we subsidize drug prices in other companies because we're not allowed to negotiate.
Right, exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's absurd. So, but there was a full-on admission since, by the way, within 24 hours, as most moments of Republican honesty are, completely, pulled back, you know, they've been running from it ever since. But
when Boehner said he agreed that there
Boehner said that there is not an immediate debt crisis. Paul Ryan saying there's not, you know, does not have an immediate debt crisis. This is from CBS News. United States does not have a debt crisis. House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan said today on Face the Nation. So he was corroborating what House Speaker John Boehner and President Obama have said in both chambers of Congress, as both chambers of Congress scramble to concoct a budget plan to shore up the federal deficit. But Ryan added a crisis is irrefutably on its way. Well, yeah, if we didn't do anything.
Right.
But a balanced approach would be doing something, and that's okay. Raising revenues is part of solving that. The interesting thing about it is that they've attached the word revenue and to the word loophole. In a negative sense, that closing a loophole is the same as raising tax rates. Instead of going, no, we've got companies who are double dipping on the protections they are getting.
Right.
And there are certain loopholes that allow them to get paid to move jobs overseas. That's not something that the government should be subsidizing.
Correct.
So we want to shut that loophole down.
And somehow they're trying to equate that now with new tax
revenue. Raising taxes. Right, exactly. The same way that they, you know, that by, you know, Obamacare being viewed as a tax by Justice Roberts as a way of justifying its existence,
right,
and keeping it on the books because it actually did qualify under the 10th and they didn't have a problem with it. It doesn't have to be a tax for it to work. But that was his way of throwing conservatives a bone while doing what he knew long term was actually correct.
The right thing to do.
Right. And that's the situation that these guys are in. But it's interesting that they call that out and then they get stuck in this circular, this cycle that they have of, oops, I said something reasonable or truthful and I'm going to be eaten alive by my cuckoo bird constituency.
But how much of that is actually being eaten alive by the red meat sucking base and how much of it is fabricated? Like, how much of it is they think that's going to be the problem? Because I hear a lot right now,
right,
about how the Tea Party Americans for Prosperity, the Grover Norquist group, are threatening to primary Republicans,
right,
who vote in any capacity for any sort of revenue increase. But I don't know what the strength of that part of the Republican Party truly is. Like, how strong are they? And whoever they run as a Republican primary challenger, would they really even be able to win?
Right.
So I don't know if that's a real threat or if it's a perceived threat. And if it's just a perceived threat, then maybe some of these Republicans would be smart to stand up and say, mm-mm.
Right.
Like, not all that threatened by you.
Right. And I can afford to have some flexibility in the same way that there can be what would be Democrats in purple or reddish districts who are able to straddle a line. And as much as I'm not a huge fan of your blue dog crowd, they are able to sign things across the line. They are able to act as basically old school Reagan Republicans who, while conservatives, still would reach across the aisle and stuff that was pretty beyond debate, like everybody just got it, and including things like immigration reform and stuff, which used to be a bipartisan issue. And, you know, but anyways, let's, we've only got a couple minutes. Let me take one call real quick before we go to that break. What do you think, Tony?
Huh? Yes.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
Now
that
he's a big TV star, Tony.
I know.
Do what
he's
you
like,
want.
Do what you want. Because Harriet in Jacksonville has been holding a while, and she has an idea for the GOP.
Okay. How you doing, everybody?
Good morning.
I got two things.
Yep.
First one is for Jackie. Jackie, you got the best laugh on TV.
It's lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, the other thing is that the GOP should change its name to the Grand Young Party, GYP, because their whole budget is a jip. Thank you.
Oh,
nice. Well done. Look at that, because it's
a
jip.
Speaking of the
GYP, easy is one, two. I don't know how to count.
Well, speaking of the budget, I mean, this is frustrating because during the election we had this conversation how Paul Ryan's budget was actually a fantasy unicorn magic fairy dust.
Right. It imagines the repeal of Obamacare but keeps the savings that you would get from actually.
But even when he did it before, I mean, this
right.
one is just a mirror image
sure.
of what he did before. But even before, during the election, they talk about him being this great thinker and this great math guy, and none of his math actually adds up.
Right.
And he's doing it again, and the media is paying attention to this new budget proposal as if it's something that could actually happen, but it can't actually happen because there's so many parameters to it that mathematically just don't work.
Right. Well, so, that's because it's based on It's an ideological document
and
not a budget.
And he calls it a vision. He came out this weekend on
He had to, because there's no numbers to it, essentially.
It's a vision.
Right. And it's based...
A little blurry, but it's a vision.
Right, yeah. It's the kind of vision that, you know, when you're getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, you don't feel like turning on the lights and makes you shin yourself on the coffee table. It's that kind of
a vision
for a country. The issue I have with him is that it's also based on his Ayn Randian fantasy of bootstrappers, of which a crowd that, by the way, he himself does not belong to, nor did she. Ayn Rand, of course, died a grifter on Social Security with her, I guess, live-in boyfriend. And I'm sure somebody will go, you know, high detail on it. But she herself had a boyfriend / husband or whatever that she said was her husband and got Social Security benefits because they pretended to be on it. Yeah.
Oh.
Completely full of beans. Completely full of it. But this is... We'll talk about it when we come back from the break.
I can see your head's working in something that's going to go a lot longer than that.
Yeah, too much to get to. We'll be back right after this. 1-800-STEP-12 is the number. Stephanie Miller Show, now with 100% more loud guitars. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation, and I hope they're relaxing. Did we just get a note from T-Bone? Did he?
Yes.
Yes?
I got a note from T-Bone that says, sounds like a good show.
Maybe it Chris made him stay up and listen.
It also sounds like he just tuned in.
Yeah. So far, I don't know. Yeah. That first hour was a wash, honestly. I don't know what I was thinking. There was next to nothing substantive about it, and I wish I had a fart button, but I don't. I've got Stephanie's box right here.
Stephanie takes her box with her?
But I was, you know, like every time I pushed a button to try and bail out of what I was talking about, I kept hearing...
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
I'm trying. I really was. So, you know, and I would... Just anything that I would do to try and kick it in, that was the response I would get from the box.
Hmm.
It's a little rough. 1-800-STEP-12 is the number, of course. Again, phone line still blowing up. Here we have, I'm looking at the cartoon that Paul Ryan put out as the budget, you know, his outline.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, they use the word, blueprint a lot. There's a lot
proposal,
of...
Proposal.
Yeah.
Right?
Proposals, concepts. They also, it presupposes that things that are happening now aren't happening, like energy usage. We will use more of America's energy, you know, gas and oil reserves and resources than we have, and coal, blah, blah. We're using record numbers of them, off the charts levels of them. But I got news for you. As long as you're on a resource-based energy system or a resource-based economy, you're always at the effect of the limitations on that resource. At some point, that is going to come home to roost. There is no way around it. You are going to run out of it. And if you go, well, we've got 100 years of natural gas. Look, if it's causing earthquakes to get it out of the ground now, what do you think the crap natural gas that we're not even bothering to get out of the ground? If there was an easy flow, you know, there was a spigot you could stick in the ground, you go, boop, and psst, hey, check that out. Let's do have a barbecue. We would be using that natural gas right now. We're not. The natural gas boom that's going on right now involves pumping huge amounts of chemicals and water into the ground, shaking it up.
Are you talking about fracking?
Yes, fracking. So it's released into, you know, and then captured while leaving all this extra gunk in the groundwater and directly causing earthquakes in areas of the country they're not used to them. Here we are. We've retrofitted buildings since 1992 to keep them standing after an earthquake. Ohio's never done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you live in Ohio, in John Boehner's district, if you want to find out the hard way. Now, granted, in John Boehner's district, unfortunately, anybody who voted for him last time around, or the last 10 times around, I forget how long he's been in office, you're not thinking about the future. You're totally just, you've hung up on that notion, because in just outside his district, let's say in Lima, Ohio, there is a factory that is making Abrams tanks, okay? And they just, he put, with a couple of other congresspeople, $181 million into the budget, snuck it in there as pork for Lima, Ohio, for this Abrams tank thing, for upgrades to this tank, which is being phased.
Do we use this tank?
Out. No. They hate it. It's a Cold War relic, and they're trying to get rid of it. And this is to upgrade the facility to upgrade the tank that's never going to be used in battle. Like, there's the F-35.
It's like the fattiest pork possibly.
Right. This is what the president is talking about when he's saying we need actual smart budget cuts, not the sequester across the board kind of idea where we're just percentaging it down and pretending that solves the problem. Because the F-35, for example, maybe people don't know about this, but the F-35 is a plane that's been in the works since 88. And it's been outside the budgetary constraints and review process, because that's originally how it was put in. During the Cold War, they were worried about infiltration of communists or some nonsense, Ted Cruz style. So they let a lot of the weaponry, they were like, okay, once it starts and we sign off on this, nobody gets to stop it. Because what if the bad guys get in here and get elected? I mean,
but what is this aircraft?
It's hard to say. It's the closest. Its closest cousin.
What do we think it is?
Okay. It's a stationary takeoff like a Harrier, but also a speed takeoff plane. It's painted with stealth, but
it's like multiple variants they have. There's one they have that flies. So this goes this way.
It's never been built.
Never. Well, they've made 8 or 10 of them, but they're so expensive to run, and they can only stay in the air for such a short amount of time, and they weigh so much fuel that they're completely useless. The F-22, which is its closest cousin, I think it can be in the air for 15 hours a month. That's the amount of time it can actually be a serviced airplane working.
Which is not a lot.
It's totally useless.
Okay.
Especially as a long-range fighter,
okay.
against MiGs that don't exist anymore.
Ultimately, how close you get to take off and how long airtime.
In the fantasy that where we're going to bomb Iran, and they've got an active air force, and they're buying old Russian instrumentation and that kind of stuff, F-16s are plenty to take care of that, and solid fighters and drones will take out a lot of that stuff. There's an infrastructure in the Air Force that knows what they're doing. From bombers to fighter jets, the F-35 is an albatross.
Okay.
With its, it's another one of these kind of, like, we decided, what if we had the engines facing inward towards the pilot and the guns curl back on top of it? It's like a ridiculous monstrosity. But it's outside the review process. It can't be stopped. And it's 70% over budget at this point. It's a complete piece of crap. But no one will go in and stop it because jobs. Because it's their jobs building this plane.
But it's the guys who are so concerned about American jobs on this sort of antiquated
relic
of a machinery, but they're going to outsource jobs to other countries the things we really need.
Right. Well, to Paul Ryan's mindset, they're a federal worker who helps process VA benefits, Americans with disabilities, services, make sure that buildings are retrofitted so that people in wheelchairs can work right along everyone else they're capable of working next to, is a waste of federal money and should be something left up open to corporations to kind of pick up the slack, which if they'd have done, it never would have been necessary in the first place. But the building of the F-35 in a circular piece of crap fashion on and on and on for decades and decades, wasting money.
Since 88.
Yeah, since 88 is a worthwhile usage of federal funds that should be sacrosanct and untouched. I mean,
not having this debate in Congress?
Well, it comes up every so often, and then it gets shut down. I mean, because the denial of debate is what is the game in the House these days. And the whole point is to stop debate on stuff. That's what, when you hear filibuster, again, Rand Paul's filibuster for all of its, was the reason it doesn't work and why most Republicans are against genuine filibusters is because eventually you will speak your truth. Most people, you know how people are afraid of public speaking? I hear this all the time when I'm as a stand-up comedian. They're like, I could never do that. If I stood up there, I would be so scared and I'd probably freeze. And that's the majority of people, that's their initial fear. Freezing is not your problem. Guess what, kids? freezing is not the problem you're going to have on stage.
You're afraid you're going to say something you don't want to say.
You're going to start jibber-jabbering to fill the empty silence just to keep, and you're going to blurt out your own personal sexual deviancy, your any family secrets, the fact that your uncle lives on your couch, and you're just going to blurt, and then you're going to catch hell from all the people in your life because you said all these things in public. That's where the fear really comes from. And that's what Republicans are really afraid of in a legit filibuster, is that if they stand up there long enough and they keep talking, somebody's going to go, stop reading the phone book and talk about what you want to talk about. And Rand Paul said that he supports the Lochner case, which was one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of the country, which was protected contracts between companies and their workers so that no one could decide your work hours without your consent, meaning that the government couldn't set a 40-hour work week, mm-hmm. an 8-hour work day, a guaranteed lunch hour for the health and safety of the workers because the contract with the company was sacrosanct, so a company could write a contract. If you want to work here, you got to work for $1 an hour for 22 hours a day, and if you doze off and fall into a machine, we don't have to have liability insurance. And the government said, every one of those guys who falls into one of those machines, we're paying to keep him alive or take care of his widow and his orphans at the time. And so, yeah, we do have a say in it, and you can't work people to death.
That seems like a reasonable
right.
use
and
of
Lochner was,
federal oversight.
Lochner is an embarrassment, as one of the cases. And in the middle of his filibuster, Rand Paul comes out and says that Obama should take another look at the Lochner case. It was actually a good decision.
You think that was in his notes?
I don't necessarily think it was an accident, but I think it was way down in the list. He got into it about hour 9 or something like that. But the idea is that they're afraid they're actually going to speak their truth. That's the worst thing that possibly happened. That's why, you know, they make fun of Sarah Palin made fun of the president using a teleprompter, and her joke was read from a teleprompter.
They all use teleprompters.
They have to, because if they speak off the cuff, they'll either sound like the idiots they are, or they will say something true, like Scott Terry said at the CPAC minority outreach thing, where he said when Frederick Douglass, the leader of this discussion, said Frederick Douglass wrote to his former slave master and said, I forgive you. This guy, the CPAC conference attendee, Scott Terry, said, for what? Providing him with food and shelter? That's what they're afraid of, that they'll actually, you know, look at Rick Santorum when he almost said the N-word.
Yeah.
Because he was so used to saying it or hearing it in the circles he was running.
Was it the N-word or was it blah?
No.
It was
he said that too.
Who was
but
the
he
blah?
Said the government. He said he went to government and...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he bailed out mid-word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was he the one who bailed out on the...
Yes, on blah people.
Blah people.
Yes, he
okay.
said, yeah, I didn't say black people, I said blah people. We can go, I mean, there's a whole section there, but the idea is that I genuinely think, we got to take a break, we'll come back, there's going to be, we'll get to more of your calls, the lines are lit up again.
Let's do calls.
On the,
enough of us.
On the other side of this, in the waning minutes of the premier vacation week episode. And I think we're holding it together pretty well, according to T-Bone, anyways. We'll be back right after this. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Tony, Rebecca, and Jackie. An all-new set of mookage.
She's the aggressive progressive. Dunker. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. We have a lot of callers on the line, but I can't see them anymore because the monitor went out. It's very sad. We have to shake the mouse.
There's a hamster
yeah, there
on the
it
wheel
is.
That's
yeah, it's came back.
There.
We're good. Okay. Now, a lot of people have been holding on because we've been talking about so many diverse topics today, including the Steubenville rape trial. Apparently, there are going to be more charges.
Yeah, they're going to look into the possibility that there's more charges. They're going to convene a grand jury.
Right. And then we've been, of course, talking about the fictional budget and the trumped up debt crisis that the Republicans have been pushing as a way to choke austerity down the throats of America. You just like the idea because it works so well in Greece. and the IMF, when the IMF comes out and says austerity is a terrible idea, we're sorry we recommended it, we take responsibility for crashing several economies by forcing austerity on them, and then we're going to follow that path? When the IMF...
Watch the GOP rebranded as retro.
Yeah, that's true, right, yeah.
It's vintage.
Like, yeah, they're like Blinky from Pac-Man, you know. But they're going to stay red. Let's actually go to Amy in Columbus, Ohio. She's been holding a while about the Steubenville trial. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I actually have two thoughts. One, it was kind. She was the problem in the case. A lot of times it seemed she shouldn't have been drinking so much. Nothing was ever said about what they should have been drinking. And being here in Columbus, we could see the verdict live.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave both boys a chance to speak after they were sentenced. And the first boy, it seemed completely coached, unsincere, as well for the second boy that cried. It's like he was crying more than he was convicted.
Well, yeah, he was. He's going to jail.
Right, but, like, he was crying because of that, not because of what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these boys are going to serve a little bit of time, and as soon as they turn 21, it's wiped from their record. She, for the rest of her life, will have to live with it.
Well, I think they're going to have to register as sex offenders. They will have to continue doing that. That will stick with them.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not going to walk away from that part of it. So they're going to have to register when they move to a new neighborhood. They're going to have to tell people when they go to get a job that they were, you know, and people will be able to go, wait a minute, is this, let me look him up on the internet. Oh, he was. This was one of the kids who's, you know what, I'm going to look at the other people in this office who might have a problem working with these guys, and it will affect them long term. But I think not enough. Absolutely, and you're absolutely right. There was a lot of attention paid on this girl was drunk beyond control. Well, here's the thing: they weren't. They made multiple decisions about this, and
right.
There's a certain point where you know I don't drink. I've never had an alcoholic drink in my life, and I laugh at these ads that say drink responsibly because the vast majority of people I know who drink. Especially to excess, drink to avoid responsibility. The whole point is you can use I was drunk as an excuse.
Yeah, I mean, people use it as an opportunity to turn their brain off sometimes.
Right, exactly. Or to say their brain was turned off when it was not.
And there's no responsible drinking when you're underage. I mean,
that's absolutely true.
Great point, Amy. And thank you for holding on. We had very little time, so I want to make sure some other folks get in. But a really great point that they bring up how much she was drunk and how much she was drinking, but not what their imbibing level was.
But also not only that, but where in their psyche is that behavior okay?
Right.
What kind of human being are you that you look at a young woman who is passed out beyond comprehension and say, I am going to do multiple sexual things to this person who cannot respond. And I'm going to videotape it. I'm going to take pictures of it. I'm going to promote it. I'm going to laugh about it. And somehow in my mind, that's an okay thing to do.
Right. Well, it is hard to... There shouldn't be a point. The point is that we need, I think, as a society, we need to do a better job of extending the respect to women in general that needs to exist. And we talked a little bit about just the view of women in public, but you look at everything ticks down, you know, there's no way you can't equate the anti-equality movement of the Republican Party and teen gay suicides, because when you're telling an adult that you don't have the right to marry, you're telling a kid you don't have the right to matter.
That's a very good
And an adult point. Can go, the hell with you, I'm a grown person, I'm going to fight for my rights. But a kid can go, if an adult, after all this, with all the stuff that's on television and people have finally, you know, 70% of the public, but they still can't do this, what hope do I have? And you take that hope away, and you do it repeatedly by denigrating them because you think you're just downplaying some adult's, you know, sexual choices, and it's your belief system that you must overlay it. This is, it's amazing. Let's go to Samantha in Colorado. Samantha, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
Great.
I wanted to make a couple points real quick.
Yeah.
In all of the debates that the Republican Party keeps bringing up, as though the evangelical church, nowhere in marriage does there say anything about religion. You go down, you buy your marriage license. A judge or an Elvis impersonator can marry you. Only a judge can divorce you. You can write your own vows. Where's God?
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's in the heart of the people involved.
But because there are people who are not of the Christian faith, who are pagan, they are trying to say that marriage is a religious institution when it is a financial government contract.
Right. Well, it's, you know, anybody who's, and it's a great point, Samantha, that I make a point in Charmageddon, my stand-up special, you know, that marriage itself, relationships may be viewed as a bonding of a couple under the eyes of God, and that love brought you together, and love being part of God and the force of the universe. Well, you can make all the case you want about that. But the mechanics of marriage itself was village elders keeping track of whose kids were whose, because inbreeding is a distinct problem when you're in a tribal society, and you need to know whose kids are whose so you can pair them together, because the mispairing creates all kinds of genetic loops, and we all end up like the wild and wonderful whites of West Virginia. It's a big problem. We only got a minute left. Thank you, Jackie Schechner, for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, my pleasure.
So lucky to have Tony on the boards with us.
Now that he's all famous.
Now that he's famous. And Rebecca Taylor on the phones. Be good to her when you call in tomorrow. I'm Hal Sparks, at Hal Sparks on Twitter. Notes, criticism, love notes, anything you want to send via Twitter, you're certainly welcome. Jackie Schechner. However you spell it, you're spelling it wrong.
At Jackie Schechner, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Google it.
And at SM Show, it's just going to get better and better all week. I just know it. We're going
to
have a great time. And Steph will be back starting next Monday. But this week,
it's all us,
baby. We go party. We go party. We'll be back tomorrow. So exciting.